Welcome back to Beat Seeker. I'm your host, Matt McButter. In each episode, we explore the shifting world of music with world-renowned experts and artists to take you deep, deep inside the fascinating and changing world of music technology and music discovery.
And I'm your host, Mike Weider, reminding you to subscribe in Apple Podcasts and give us a five-star rating if you like the episode. You can visit our website at beatseeker.fm, where you'll find plenty of rabbit holes with extra content to dive into, guest backgrounds, and even a playlist with music recommendations from each of our guest episodes. Also, BeatSeeker swag. You can stay current and talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at BeatSeekerPod. It seems like there's little room to enter the music streaming market with companies like Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Tencent dominating global market share. But innovators always seem to find a way in. Tune Global is a B2B streaming technology provider that helps companies launch their own streaming services. Their technology has been used by some of the biggest names, including UFC, Warner, Universal, and Sony Music Group.
Joining us today is Con Rasso, the founder and managing director of Tune Global. Con is a lifelong innovator and music technologist who has created disruptive tech solutions in the transition from CD to download, then streaming, and now Web3. Con joins us from London, England. Con, thanks for joining us on BeatSeeker.
Hey, great to meet you guys and be with you guys here.
Con, the streaming market is a very competitive business. Between Spotify and giants like Apple and Google, the idea of entering this market might seem crazy to some. But your company is doing exactly that. It sounds like you're getting some traction. Tell us what your company does and why the market needs more streaming options.
Yeah, great question. And it's interesting how each country evolves in this way as well, right? So what we do is we're a technology company that gives people effectively a toolkit that enables them to build their own streaming services. Now, it could be that they want to get involved and get really techie themselves and build their own front ends, and then they can use our APIs. Or we can actually provide turnkey solutions where we can provide front and back ends and from music, which we're really focusing on today, but also from video, live broadcasts, podcasts, and really, I guess it's up to what the company's trying to achieve with what they're doing. In terms of, I guess, you know, what I mentioned earlier, with different countries, I think there's always a stage where a country gets access to a broad-based streaming product like maybe Spotify or Apple or one of the other big ones. And there's a period of time that they go, okay, that's all I need. And pretty soon that can be, I guess opportunities can be seen in the market there. Those products are so big, they're so broad. When you want to get down to understanding potentially a niche amount of product, or you want to create something unique, those opportunities aren't really there. So I think then the market starts to look at that and say, okay, so what can we do that can live alongside these products? Now, I will say, and we'll go a little bit deeper maybe, there is some markets where the broad streaming services are not available, and there it's, I guess, like the Old West, that there's everyone sort of hunting for market share and finding out what can they do that's a little bit different, right,
in Interesting.
Those particular markets.
What are some of those markets, just, you know, that I'm curious, being, you know, in Canada, We're so saturated with streaming solutions here in North America, so what are the markets where it's still the Wild West, where people are still hunting for that market share?
Yeah, I think certainly we're getting a lot of interest from various countries in Africa. And so a lot of those African countries, we just launched a couple of services in Ethiopia. You know, really interesting market that's more based on local content. We've then launched services in Ghana. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, those markets are looking for something a little bit different as well than the major streaming services, and also looking for really different ways that they're being monetized. And what the traditional services are doing in those markets sort of isn't really having traction there. So I think it really opens up those opportunities for what people can do. I'm also pretty passionate, you know, around, I guess, how do you support local artists in a lot of these markets? And I love to see the innovation that brings more opportunity for local artists to really thrive. And that's always difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine whether you're serving those markets or, you know, more established markets like North America and European countries where streaming is a little bit more, you know, maybe established by some of the big players, that getting the music labels to cooperate and those agreements must still be a challenge, I imagine. I'm not sure if you've seen the Netflix Spotify documentary and, you know, in the very first episode, you know, Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify, you know, tries and fails repeatedly to get the music labels to cooperate. I mean, and almost, you know, the company almost dies. And so like, you know, on fumes, they ultimately prevailed, but it shows how tough this business can be when you need the gatekeepers to say yes, you know, before you can kind of move on. So is this a challenge for you as well? Is this just a general challenge or, you know?
Absolutely.
How do you address this?
I mean, you know, what really hit me about that particular series was it was almost these sliding door moments, right? It was just so lucky that a couple of things connected together, because we've seen those same approaches and they haven't come through, right? They haven't been able to be convinced to be part of this service, right? And I think that's, an interesting take. I think there's a lot of passion passion's perhaps the wrong word. I think there's a lot of desire by the music labels to innovate. I do think they do want to see competition and really be able to thrive and create innovative ways to consume music that don't exist today in a lot of ways, right? I think, though, the challenge is history. So often there's certain price sets for certain services and then they become the de facto norm across the world. And it's really difficult to move those models in ways that work for everyone. And you've got competing sides here, haven't you, right? You've got artists that want to get paid more. You've got services that want to bring in a service at the lowest price so they get the most amount of people on. And I'm not sure that those things don't, you know, clash a reasonable amount. So I do think that those same challenges exist today as they did in the past. And I think it's difficult to get a music service off the ground if you want to use majors content and you don't have at least a reasonable amount of funds raised toward that outcome, right? I just think that's the reality.
So now just to be clear, you got your platform. So if I want to build a music streaming app, I can use your platform to help me with the technology and pre-build a lot of the technical aspects as well as access content libraries and so forth. Do you also deal with, is there a standardized business model or do I need to still negotiate something directly with the labels or is that part of your value that you deal with that on behalf of these parties who are creating these regional apps or application specific streaming apps?
Yeah, sometimes regional apps don't have majors content for a start, right? And I think we can sort of delve into that and see where do they need that and maybe where don't they need that. But it really varies greatly, that question, right? So there's not an easy answer. If the we can certainly in many cases provide a much easier way to get a license with the license holders, and we can assist with that process. Or we can, with more established companies, assist with the discussions with the music labels to be able to get the right outcomes that the companies are looking for. But ultimately, they do need a music license, and it's, I'm going to say, rare and probably impossible that most of the major labels are allowing their license to, content to be sub-licensed. You effectively need to have a license in some ways. There is some niche offerings where that's not there, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's still a major obstacle that you need to get their enough of their attention and to negotiate this. So maybe we could talk a little bit about some of these applications. You have some really interesting customers that have built music apps using your platform. You spoke about some of the regional applications like in Africa and so forth. But I saw some other ones like Lululemon was a recent one you talked about. The UFC fighting guys. Even Pizza Hut. So walk us through some of these. Like, why does Pizza Hut need a streamer?
I mean, it's an interesting question. I think that's more of, a brand wanting to do something that I'm going to say is medium term in length. And in their, what they wanted to do was become more relevant to their market in Malaysia. They wanted to reach a more youthful audience in with that. And so what we were able to do in partnership with Universal Music in that market was be able to create a fun way for people to connect with pizza and connect with music. So they actually scanned a QR code on a pizza box. It actually started vinyl spinning on their phone instantly, right? From that vinyl, it engaged those people to be able to actually download an app which gave them a constantly changing repertoire of music. And then they could actually scan things like they were buying pizzas they were buying from Pizza Hut, those receipts, and they actually got into the draw for a Shawn Mendes concert and got flown around the world to be able to go
So it's not like I'm replacing Spotify with my Pizza Hut.
Exactly.
That was an activation. That was a marketing activation.
Totally. That one's really different. I would say that for the other niche ones, we've got a question that we always ask a new potential client, and we say, "What's the center of your world?" And we want to know: is the center of their world artists? Is it playlists? Is it radio? Is it maybe some UGC thing that they're doing? Is it something else? Right? And then once we understand that, we can start to piece together, okay, from our toolkit, here's how we would perhaps recommend that you're able to achieve that objective from the center of your world. So in the UFC app, for argument's sake, center of the world is really about the fighter. So it's what the fighter loves to follow and loves to listen to, and how can I get a bit of an insight into how they're thinking and use that as a way to connect to music, right? Whereas with other services, it's really highly curated and it's a much more of a playlist offering perhaps, or perhaps a discovery option where you can start getting into really edges of understanding music. So each of those really has a quite a different outcome, and I think it's really that unique selling proposition of our clients at the end of the day.
I got you. I saw one that was, I guess you've got a couple of medical ones as well that sounded kind of interesting. Like there was a company that was using music to treat mental health issues and other medical applications. Maybe you could just talk briefly about that.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. There's a couple of them that come to mind. One of them is US-based and one of them's UK-based. The US-based is called New Life, and they actually are treating brain injury with a mixture of pharmaceuticals and music, right? And they've been really successful in being able to get good outcomes from that process, right, in terms of that. The other one is Medi Music in the UK, and that is for dementia patients. And they are working really closely with the NHS in the UK market. So, some great traction there. And again, they're using music to actually change the behaviour and the response of dementia patients with some great results. And I think their connection to the NHS and the positive results they've got from that really speaks highly of those guys. I think we're seeing, certainly in terms of companies that approach us, there's a lot of activity with people trying to do different things in, I guess, how to manage people that might have whatever challenge they might have. It might be a physical or mental challenge, and how do they actually use music as a really positive way to those outcomes. Often, though, it does get down to understanding how you can segment this music, maybe use technology in terms of whether it's AI or ML-based systems to get deeper into what music is actually going to make a difference in each of these cases and for each of these patients.
Very interesting. Now, want to talk a little bit about, you know, the sort of future directions here. AI has been a huge hot topic of late. And, I mean, AI is kind of eating the world in all different industries, right? You know, Spotify has long had AI-powered music recommendation, for example, you know, Discover Weekly, that kind of thing. And recently introduced an AI DJ that will, you know, sort of mix tracks for you. What's your take on, you know, the current and future impact of AI on music streaming in general?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting if we bleed into AI-created music as well. And what does that mean in the future? Maybe in the world of gaming and other things like that, right? Yeah. But I think AI is one of those terms that I sort of like and I sort of hate, right? Because, you know, what actually is it? Is it an algorithm, or is it something really black box and clever? I don't know on that one. But I would say that systems that try successfully to predict what a user may want to listen to at different times of the day and offer options for that listening are definitely where the future is going to. My only concern on that is that that journey doesn't stay narrow. So it's got true AI to enable the discovery of music and not put people in a box and keep them in a box, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're certainly doing work on that around understanding cohorts of behaviours and then looking at what cohorts similar to you might be listening to and you have not yet discovered yet, but it's not based on genre. It's actually based on groups of people that we think are similar to you guys, right? So I think when we extend in AI in those ways, it's definitely an impact to the future. I do think, though, that at the moment, if you look at, we hold about 102 million tracks, I think, at the moment, right? And other people hold 120 and 140, and SoundCloud's got, you know, the magic number with even more.
600 million or something.
Exactly. And everyone's saying that that's going to double in the next couple of years. And I guess the question for me is that doubling because of AI-created music? And I really see an interesting use case for when you're creating gaming and trying to actually create a unique experience. Can you actually feed in information and actually get music that fits that game mode in almost maybe real time, maybe not real time, but really alter that? I think in gaming, it's really going to impact first and then it's going to roll out into other markets from that process.
Interesting. So what other innovations are you excited about in streaming land? Looking forward, what changes do you think are going to, you know, fundamentally maybe transform our streaming experience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the big catchphrase is obviously Web3 at the moment. And what does that mean? We're doing a lot of experiments. And when I say experiments, I think it's so new that it has to be a world full of experiments. It can't be a world full of here's what's going to happen and how it's going to happen. But I definitely think merging metaverse experiences with a Web2 experience and enabling people to share an experience together in the metaverse rather than necessarily how they do it in a Web2 world is definitely going to be something that's really interesting in that space. I think that gives us an opportunity to gamify people's experience when they're in that world that they can't currently do in a Web2
So you're thinking
experience.
Like the three of us go jump into some room in the metaverse and listen to music together, that sort of thing?
I'm actually thinking that, like, we're building a skinnable building at the moment in Decentraland so our clients can use that building, right? It's got a lot of features in there where you can do some exclusive things and then also just have a party in there. I actually think that we might go in there, listen to music, and we might actually play an action game together and start to try to get on a leaderboard, but we're actually part of the music experience as we do that, and our friends can come into that at the same time, right, and be part of a growing experience. I think that'll be a really fun component that merges a real playlisting experience with a gaming experience in that space.
Cool. So cool. I got to spend more time in the metaverse, I think.
Well, it's a lonely space at the moment, right? But yeah. But hopefully it gets busier and busier.
Yeah, indeed. So, Con, we like to ask our guests if they have a music recommendation for our guest picks playlist. So you got something we can put on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think at the moment, you know, I'm sort of into my background from when I was into my punk rock and out of my punk rock era was very much UK music and bands like The Fall and things like that. And I guess, you know, Idols for me is something that almost mimics where I was at previously, right? Yeah. So that's certainly a lot of fun and music I'm into. I think Shame is also, you know, a slightly different take and being able to get into that and discover that a little bit recently. So bit of a fan there at the moment.
Okay, all right. Well, yeah. Idols were here. We're in Toronto last year and I actually missed them. I was out of town. So I want to catch them next time. I'll put on some Idols onto the list. It's a great pick.
Awesome.
And finally, if our listeners want to follow you or your work or, you know, check out Tuned Global or get connected, where are some places they should go?
Yeah, I mean, probably the best place, you know, it's still, I guess, from that perspective, a little bit corporate-y. So, you know, definitely go to tuneglobal.com and also, you know, follow us on LinkedIn. We try to keep people updated on that process there as well. They're probably the two main areas that I'd suggest to find out a little bit more about us and what we're doing in the market.
Sounds good. And we'll put some links to those in the show notes. Con, we want to thank you so much for being with us today. It was really interesting.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks,
appreciate
Con.
It. See you guys.
You've been listening to Beat Seeker with your hosts, Matt McButter and Mike Wider. If you like the show, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. While you're there, leave us a rating and a comment and share it with your friends and colleagues. If you want to dig deeper into this content, visit beatseeker.fm. That's BEATseeker.fm. Interact with us on social media at BeatSeekerPod. BeatSeeker is recorded in the Devil Lake Studios and the Tunnel Under Arundel. The show is produced by Matt McButter, Mike Wider, and Kate McCartney. Thanks for tuning in and keep seeking.